Good evening. James Buchanan here with my Science Hour. It's Thanksgiving Day, Thanksgiving evening, November 27th, 2014. Tonight I will be giving my Thanksgiving address, talking about what I am thankful for, possibly some things that you could be thankful for. But there is a group of people, and let's just put it like this. They don't have a voice. They've really never had a voice. They are not going to sit down at any Thanksgiving dinner to give thanks. And so who are these people? I'm going to be talking about them, the main address, tonight. But first, I have a few announcements to make. This came in from a listener, and I just love my listening audience. In fact, let me just go through a short litany here of things that I am personally thankful for in my own life. I'm very thankful for my work. And a lot of people pray, they kneel down, and they have a special session with their creator and talk. And when I pray through my work that I do. I figure that is a type of prayer. And so I feel that is developing my talents and using my talents, developing them, and then developing it in a manner that the public can understand, and making it into something useful. And in the case of, say, let's say prime number, something that I've been working on a lot throughout my life and had some successes and now pushing the frontier on those, or just any of the other topics, the solar system work, electrical nature of the solar system, whatever it is, or the work, the progress on water filtration, just whatever it is, I feel that my work that I do is a sort of prayer. Because it's a reflection on my belief in the universe, in the human race, and the fact that there is a percentage of people out there. There's a lot of good people. There are a lot of wonderful people, and mainly we're at war, as the Italian president said. We're at war with the European banking system that is just dragging everybody down into the ground. So when I work, what I'm trying to do is create a better world. So I'm very thankful for my work, no matter where it leads me or whatever doors it opens. And I'm very thankful for the worldwide audience that I have developed with this show, where I can speak and people are out there listening. If people don't like what I say, some of my critics, you know, you can just... The wonderful thing about radio is just turn the knob off, you know, but they listen. They're out there listening as much as they hate me. They have to listen, you know, and a lot of them are paid shills. So somebody, that's how they make their living. And if I didn't exist, gee, they wouldn't have an income. They wouldn't have anybody to criticize to protect the NASA or the government agencies, the pollution agencies, etc. But I'm very thankful for my audience. Wow, that's a huge one. So thank you out there for listening, for being a part of my world. And as some people say, they live vicariously through my actions or through my history or things that I've done. But I hope people are doing more than simply living vicariously through me, that they are actually taking part in doing their own personal activities. One concept that I developed a long time ago, and I talked about many times on this radio show, it's something I call First Nation. First Nation, that is, you live your own democracy. There are no elections, no political parties, nobody to infiltrate your group. There are no funds to pay. There are no special clothes to wear. You just, today, you click a switch in your brain and you say, I am living my own democracy. I'm going to live the freedom that I was given to me by the Almighty Creator, by God up there, or wherever all around us, and just live that democracy yourself, because if you're going to wait till the next election, or you're going to wait till some political party gets in power, well, I wouldn't hold my breath at all, not for a New York second. You just start living your own democracy. First Nation, it's a concept. Try it out. It works. And also, I'm very thankful for my future, the time that is yet to come about. I'm very thankful for that. And every day, you know, if you look at the things that I've accomplished in my life, I'm very thankful for that. But I have this feeling inside like there's so much more I have to do. There's so many other aspects of the work that I do that have to progress. And I'm very distraught over the fact that science, all of the billions and billions, hundreds of billions of dollars that have been spent on science and equipment, is maldirected. It is just to support fairy tale science, things that couldn't possibly be true, and then to suppress the work that I do, which is obviously correct. It's just so bizarre. It's such a bizarre world we live in today. The billions and billions spent on scientific research, etc., that are just ill-directed. And then here I am paying for my own airtime. I pay for my own research. And the work that I do and present it when I publish a book, I pay for that. I do all the production work. And how bizarre, absolutely unbelievably bizarre it is that this is the state and condition of science and mathematics today, that the standard sources are so distorted and out of whack with reality. And that's true in the mathematics world, where math, for example, in the world of prime numbers, something I've done very innovative work in understanding prime numbers, they are still wallowing in a 100-year-old mathematical analysis that they admit will never give any understanding of the prime numbers. It putting large boundary conditions and with extremely complex mathematics and has no ability to really give you understanding of the prime numbers. That's the condition of mathematics today. It's much like the Tower of Babel, where everybody talking but nobody can understand. That's the world of mathematics and mathematical analysis today. But it rules supreme in the ivory halls of universities. How strange, how bizarre, how totally inappropriate. But nobody can change. It's like nobody wants to change because that's what they've learned in their textbooks. Okay, so anyway, but what I'm thankful for is just the fact that I have done an end run around all of this, and I go directly to you, the public, and you, the public, I've educated over the years to the point where you can directly understand prime numbers or scientific concepts or the electrical nature of the universe, in spite of all of the misinformation, in spite of all the copycat idiots that are running around jumping up and down on the internet trying to talk about Planet X or electric universe, and they have no understanding of anything at all. It's just, you know, it's a bizarre world we live in. So what I'm thankful for is just the ability to go directly to you, the public, and have my webpage, my radio show, my books, my CDs, and the last but not least are the water filter products, my product line. And I'm not going to talk a lot about that. But anyway, I'm just thankful for a very rounded existence that I have, and my future, which I have so many things that I want to do, so many developments that are on my table that I'm working on daily and weekly and planning in the future. So that's what I'm thankful for. Okay, well, let me go into this quickly. A listener sent this in, and that's what started me kind of off on that tirade about being thankful. I'm thankful for my listeners. This was sent in by a listener. Thank you. That chemtrails are appearing in advertisements, and there apparently is a YouTube video on this. I didn't have time to look at it, but I have been noticing this myself. In fact, I thought it curious that on a Foxfire browser that I saw, there's a bunch of young adults, they look like, and they have a purpose, and they're, if you play it, they're building up, saying that the internet is independent, and they're promoting Firefox, the browser. But in the very initial scene, there are chemtrails in the sky. And this listener wrote in and he said, look, all of these advertisements have a picture of, it doesn't matter what they're selling, whether it's toothpaste or I don't know, whatever it is, they have chemtrails in the sky. And so it's a promotion of chemtrails. Now, I want to add a note here about chemtrails. It's a topic I started talking about well over a decade ago. I was on the shows like Alex Merklinger, some of the old standards on Coast to Coast AM, many shows I've been on talking about this topic. And, of course, thankfully, many people have picked up that topic. And so I don't cover it as heavily as I used to. But two things. I was studying chemtrails down in Florida. I've studied them up along the in Canada, where they spray a lot of chemtrails and they float down over the United States, robbing its precious sunlight from warming up our atmosphere. And so somebody is up there doing this, but I saw a barrel roll chemtrail. Now, you know that that was not done with a commercial jet. It was a barrel roll. You can tell, you know, when the chemtrails are being laid out, there's a smooth pattern that comes out of the jet. And then, but this one had a barrel roll. The pilot did a barrel roll. I guess he thought he was being funny. But obviously not a commercial jet, and that's one of the big points that I have made, is the jets that are doing the chemtrail spraying are not jets that are commercial jets, although commercial jets have done chemtrail spraying. But you got to understand, these planes are full of big tanks that are spraying this material into the atmosphere to control, obviously, to control climate. Obviously also to control plants and vegetation and possibly human beings. It's not clear what all is going into this, but it's very clear that there's no public disclosure regarding these events. There's no public information. So it's being sanctioned by the U.S. military, the Air Force, who's supposed to be protecting our airspace against all intruders, and they're just letting this go over international airspace unabated. But in advertisements, and like I said, I've seen this many times. The other thing is I saw the other day I was traveling. It was a cold day. And up high, you know, probably at a 30,000, 35,000 foot elevation, there was a jet with a regular contrail. Now, a contrail is the gaseous residue that comes from a normal jet engine burning jet fuel. And it was interesting to see how quickly it dissipated and it broke apart. And there were little pieces of it, kind of like a dotted line. And within, you know, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, those little pieces dissipated and were gone. And maybe, oh, you know, a short distance after the jet, the contrail was there. That's a contrail. That's a normal jet contrail. And then there's these defenders of the Reich out there who say, oh no, chemtrails are not chemtrails, they're just normal contrails. Well, it's complete hogwash. You know, everybody knows that these are chemtrails, there's chemicals they're spraying into the atmosphere. But I saw, and it actually struck me as funny that there was an airplane with just a regular contrail, because we see so many chemtrails. But the listener writing in, start to be conscious of that. It's a subliminal way to kind of put it in the minds of everybody that those little long, thin clouds up there are normal. That's the subliminal message. Another message here, I'll read this. A listener sent this in, and once again, thank you, listeners out there scouring the internet, sending these in, because I don't have time to be all over the internet. This one sent in, it says, The EPA, there's a law that they just passed in Congress preventing independent scientists from putting their opinion or having their opinions considered by the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. And so the only scientists now who are allowed to give opinions to the EPA on subjects of environmental protection are those that work for the industry, the industrial companies that have a economic concern relative to the pollution. And I've always said that the EPA is the Environmental Protection Agency. It's the Environmental Pollution Agency, because what they do is they set limits on pollution. But the problem with pollution is that it is cumulative. It builds up over time. And so it's like if you took arsenic, something that builds up over time. In fact, there's a lot of arsenic in our groundwater and in city well water that is pumped into your line with the municipal water. There's a lot of arsenic that's natural in the ground. And over time, that accumulates in your body. It doesn't go away. It doesn't flush out. So people are slowly being poisoned simply by groundwater. That's why, for example, my filters take out arsenic. It's one of the things you got to get rid of. I don't care if you're on a well or if you're at the city water. That's one thing you want to get rid of. Fluorinated water is another thing. It's terrible for you. There was a chemical spill one time in a parking lot of a municipal water system, and they had spilled. It was a chemical spill of the fluoride gunk that they put into your water. It burned a hole through the concrete. They had a special crew that had to come to clean it up with hazard suits on. And the fluorinated chemical that they put in your water burned a hole through the cement in the parking lot. Yeah, that's real good stuff to be drinking, so you got to get that out of your water. But anyway, I want to read a piece here from this email talking about the legislation that they just passed, saying that scientists cannot, independent scientists cannot be used. And here's the wording. It says, the research scientists are barred under the Act from advising on any topic that might directly or indirectly involve review or evaluation of their own work. So in other words, the only people barred from advising the EPA on a particular chemical are those who have actually studied its toxicity or effect on the environment. So if groups have studied toxicity or pollution or the effects of pollution on the environment, they are barred from giving advice to the EPA or presenting those results. So the only people who can give advice, now I'm considered an independent scientist, and this is more and more, as long as, for example, in the so-called respectable journals, only scientists who have affiliation, recognized affiliation with a university or an industry or the government agency are allowed to publish. Other than that, you're considered an outsider, and they just quietly ignore you. It's a quiet ignorance, and that's what it is, because actually there's a good reason for peer review, because it keeps a lot of the goofy stuff out of there, and there is a lot of goofy science. I mean, just look at the internet. There's a lot of goofs out there that think they know something and are jabbering. But the problem is then there becomes a monopoly of people who reviews the papers at peer review. They are the people that are basically monopoly, so that cycle of government funding, research, publication, that cycle is monopolized by small groups of people. And sometimes they think, oh, well, if they increase funding, that will open up science. No, it just concentrates more power into those monopoly groups. But on just a little other note, it says here, one controversy after another can be attributed to the Environmental Protection Agency, an agency charged with protecting the air we breathe, the soil in which we grow our food, and the water we drink. Despite irrefutable proof that glyphosate causes cancer, the EPA increased the amount allowed to be used in agriculture. They regulate everyday folks, forcing upgrades of wood stoves while allowing big business to pollute in far more spectacular amounts than a self-sufficient family ever could create. When the radiation from Fukushima became alarmingly high on our shores, the EPA was right there on top of things with their response. First, they promptly closed down 8 of 18 radiation measuring stations in the hardest hit area of California. Then, to further calm the good people of the nation, the EPA magically changed the numbers. They've raised the amount of radiation that we can safely absorb and ingest. It wouldn't do for the large factory farms to be unable to sell their tainted produce or the huge dairies to be struck with all that radioactive milk. Okay, so anyway, I'm not going to go much more into that, but just be aware that independent scientists or independent studies are banned and now from the EPA. Just a quick note, and then I'm going to get into my Thanksgiving presentation. This is very important, and I know there's a lot of families and kids out there listening to this show, and especially on Thanksgiving, many people stop what they're doing and listen, so thank you very much for that. But remember the Orbital Sciences Corporation, Antares rocket that blew up a few weeks ago on the launch pad. I've talked about that on my radio program. Magically, 6 seconds into the burn of the main rocket booster, it blows up, destroying all of the contents of the payload, about 5,000 pounds, that were headed towards the space station. Well, it just turns out that it was full of experiments from students, nearly 49,000 students across the United States from nearly 800 U.S. schools were involved in an initiative which created experiments that were on this payload of this rocket. And so the message that while all the kids were watching this rocket go off with high hopes of having their experiment go into space and be at the space station and have their experiment performed, everything from how milk works and lasts in outer space to all kinds of student experiments, blew up on the launch pad as they were watching. Now I want to go back to a number of years ago. I believe back in the 1980s, there was a space shuttle explosion while the entire nation of kids sat and watched a woman teacher died in the Challenger shuttle explosion and subsequent catastrophe. The teacher died. Now, this was while the entire nation of students watched. We had another event this past week, and what does that tell you? That tells you that space is not for private individuals. It's too dangerous for you to go into, and the Orbital Sciences Corporation rocket was a private rocket. It was from a private corporation, not government funded. And so it gives the message, and they don't hesitate to say this in the reports that I've seen, that space is not for people. That's like you. It's only for government agencies. Now, a couple weeks ago, I reported on the Space 2, the Richard Branson Virgin Galactic space program that they were months away from sending tourists into outer space. Has a rocket malfunction seconds after it dropped off the White Knight carrier vehicle and ends up on the ground in pieces. And so the reporting there by the FAA and the analysis is that one of the co-pilots pulled a lever prematurely, and that was the cause of the demise of the spacecraft. But nobody talks about the engine failure, which started this whole thing. So at any rate, the message here across the board is that space is not for you people out there. Space is for people who work for NASA, government agencies, private industry that's related to the government, like Lockheed and Martin and Boeing and the big boys. But it's not for you. So don't go there. And this gave a clear message to the current generation of young people. Space is not for you. NASA has camps where kids go and learn about being astronauts. But I have a statistic of the tens of thousands of youth nationwide over the years that have attended those NASA camps. Not a single kid has ever become an astronaut out of that program. Very strange, but what does it do? Those kids all go back home with high hopes, tell their families, and doggone it, those taxes get paid and that money goes to NASA every year. Billions of dollars so that they can keep going. But remember, space isn't for you young people out there, according to the news reports that came out of this. So I want to tell you young people, especially, space is your birthright. Somebody is keeping you from going into outer space. NASA is a cover agency, it's a smokescreen, and there is a massive space program that goes on in the background, unbeknownst, unannounced, unregistered with the public. And so the space is considered to be the private playground of the rich and famous, the people that play ball with the bankers, the world bankers. And that is their private area. There are companies now that are talking about going into space and mining asteroids. But remember, those companies are owned by people that come out of those central groups. And the disaster here with all of these students' experiments blown up on the launch pad sends a signal to students, it's not for you. Okay, so at any rate, let me get on to my main science topic. I'm a little more than half of my show left here, and I want to talk about a group of people who are not going to have a Thanksgiving dinner this year. They're not sitting down to Thanksgiving turkey dinner. They're not able to talk about things that they're thankful for. They're not able to define their future because they don't have a voice. And who am I talking about? Am I talking about people in West Africa, or am I talking about people in Egypt or Syria or Russia or China or the United States? No, none of these groups in Latin America, whose political horizons have been controlled and dominated by the United States' absolutely corrupt foreign policy for the last 50 years. No, I'm not talking about those people either. Well, who are these people that don't have a voice, that are not going to sit down to a Thanksgiving dinner and really can't tell you what they're thankful for or what they want to be thankful for or what their future is? These are the people who have not been born yet. These are the people who will be born in 1 or 5 or 10 or 100 years or 1,000 years or 10,000 years. They don't have a voice. Nobody considers them. Nobody considers what it would be like to be a person born in 100 years if this planet is still here and look back and say, why did you people burn up all of that energy driving to work, to useless jobs, to pay taxes for foreign wars that polluted with nuclear the ammunition tipped with nuclear radiation that polluted the ground so it never could be used to grow crops, or to use Roundup ready products, seeds that only grow in a Roundup environment that destroys the ground and nothing can grow there again. One of the big issues, water, the pollution of water, or the use of nuclear power to drive the immense requirements of energy of the day, the radiation from Fukushima destroying the Pacific Ocean for thousands of years to come. And those people will have, by that time, that radiation will be in the air, it will have rained down on the land, it will be in the Atlantic Ocean, it will be in the Gulf of Mexico, or the BP oil spill of years ago where they just let it go and go and go. From lakes of oil under high pressure from under the sea, where it still is belching into the environment there, destroying the wildlife, the sea life, unabated. What voice do these people have? They don't have a voice, and less in the day we sit today. People are giving thanks for all of the things they have. The day after Thanksgiving, called Black Friday, what a term, as we lead up to Christmas, something that has been turned into an economic, the supposedly the biggest economic boost to businesses throughout the year, the biggest retail day of the entire year, the day after Thanksgiving, to buy things in the totally distorted conception of Christmas, into a commercialized holiday with Santa Claus. We have the Easter Bunny for Easter, which is a religious holiday, and on and on. It's just unbelievable. But the point is, the entire point of this, let me try and give a voice to those people in the future who don't have a voice today. Look back in 1 or 5 or 10, or let's go up to 100 years, where people are trying to exist on this planet. We may have a change in the climate, which is colder, it may be warmer, but something is very clear. How do we generate enough food to sustain a planet of 6 to 10 billion people? Now, interestingly enough, as I was sitting down to do this show, I was visiting with some friends, and on the table was an issue of Wired magazine. And the guest editor of the December 2013 Wired magazine is, somebody that I really don't like very much. His name is Bill Gates. A New World Order shill that was on the table a number of years ago when his software company called Microsoft, one of the most profitable companies ever to exist in the history of the world, making this man one of the richest men in the world, was under the gun from the federal government. He was indicted, his company was on the brink of disaster, and the cover story was that it was due to monopoly, where he didn't allow the other poor companies to have a taste of the action. Well, the real story is that Billy was resisting the CIA and the national agencies that wiretap and control the public. Billy was resisting their demands to put hooks into the software that would allow them to see into your computer, to use your computer to view your life, and allow them to acquire data on everything that you do with your computer. Billy was resisting this. And so, I mean, he could have taken his company and just moved it across the border up to Vancouver and flipped his nose to the people going after him, the federal indictments, but he didn't do that. Eventually, somebody took him aside and sat down and said, gee, Bill, you know, doggone it. We want to play ball. You want to play ball. You want to remain to be the richest man in the world right now on the top of that Forbes list every year. Doggone, that's just swell. And you can do that, but you just got to do one little thing. You got to play ball with the bankers, with the New World Order. Now, I want to continue with this. On the cover, along sitting next to Billy Gates, is a guy called Billy Clinton. And they're talking about the power of technology, and they want to fix the world. Yeah, they're going to fix the world all right, but it isn't going to be in your favor. So let's talk about, this is a lead-in to the people that haven't been born yet. We as human beings have a right, especially in the country called the United States, where we're supposedly free and we have a free will. One of the big problems, and I talk about this in my book, The Diamond Principle, which is, by the way, required reading for everybody. It's a book that talks about an analysis. The first half of the book is an analysis of the past. The second half of the book is a view into the future. The Diamond Principle is required reading for everybody. You'll find it on my webpage in ebook format, and also it's in Spanish. So if you want to read it in Spanish, there's a Spanish version there that you can get. And, of course, it's available in hardcover. But two guys here, Billy Clinton sold out to the New World Order many, many decades ago. He was... And by the way, a lot of people don't understand. Bill isn't just a guy that happened to fall off of a log down in Arkansas one day. He happens to be the illegitimate son of Nelson Rockefeller. The Rockefellers are the arm of the Rothschild Banking Organization, syndicate, if you want to call it that, or whatever, worldwide mafia, in the United States. And so, you know, here we've got Billy Gates, who came up out of nowhere, became a billionaire, and has now sold out and is buddy-buddy with the New World Order. Billy Gates decided to play ball, and what did he get out of it? Now he gets to sit there with Bill Clinton and with the other boys, and remember, there's something you have to remember, that if you see their name, this is a very simple rule to remember, young people, everybody, if you see their name, this applies to NASA scientists, people you see talking about comets, Bill Gates, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, George Bush Sr., Hagel, the guys in the CIA, if you see their name, they are middle management. These are the people that are out there because of their egos. These are the people that are willing to sacrifice whatever it takes, including you and your future, to manage the affairs of the New World Order. Now, the people that you never see their name, those are the people that actually run things. Those are the people in charge. Those are the movers and shakers. And when I had my first view of this, it was like about the early 1980s. I was out in California. I was having meetings with venture capital groups. I was in meetings with international banking groups. And I started to meet people, and I had never heard their names before. I'd never heard these types of names before. There were young people, many of them obviously not American citizens, and speaking with fairly thick accents. And here they are in these meetings that I'm going to, because I had my aerospace theoretical work and concepts dealing with basically propulsion systems. I was presenting my work at Los Alamos National Laboratory. I was presenting it at closed door, high security military conferences, and then presenting it to the venture capital groups who would fund my projects and bring them into reality. I was meeting these young people, and I'm going, wow, I have, you know, and I was the top of my class in college. You know, I had gone to grad school at Tulane University. The medical school is there. I took classes at the Tulane Medical School as part of my physics degree. I rubbed shoulders with high-level people all around the country. I had interviews in industry, doing electronics work, things like that. So at my fairly young age at that point, I had seen a lot. I'd seen a lot of people. I'd seen U.S. industry. I'd seen U.S. universities at a high level. Okay, so let's go back to 1982, and I'm meeting these young people dressed in impeccable, you know, we're talking, you know, couple thousand dollar clothes on these people. Their shoes in perfect order, brand new, but fit perfectly. They get into a European sports car. Their wives are the most gorgeous women on the planet. They speak, you know, multiple foreign languages. And I'm going, whoa, wait a minute, Batman, Robin, who are these people? Who are these people? And how do you get a job like this? Because they were moving millions of dollars per day in financial money. And if they, okay, and I saw corporations, two, three per day being formed around ideas, technical ideas that would become part of the military-industrial complex, jet fighter planes, other types of technology that did, like testing of military equipment, on and on and on. And these people in an afternoon might create a company, have a staff of financial, etc., everything around this company in an afternoon with $10 million in funding. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? You know, where have I been? What, you know, how do you get this kind of a job? And then it started dawning on me. Now, these people would be flying to Europe. They would be flying to Russia. People were coming from Russia. Some were from the Mideast. And some of them were Americans. And they were all like cousins and brothers. And in fact, they were. they were related. And I'm going, wow, this is an international community of people with serious money, serious contacts. These young kids could walk into a congressional office, congressman, and sit down and say, I want you to vote for this bill, and that guy would do it. And I'm going, whoa, excuse me. And so then it dawned on me, these people are the families, and they are the nameless people, the people you don't know their name, they're not in a newspaper, and they fly around the world living this lifestyle with all the money they could possibly want. And I had this verified by other incidences in my life as I went through my scientific career. Now, you understand that there's a level of activity here going on. Now, when you see a guy like Billy Clinton or Bill Gates, they are melded into that network. And so, for example, Billy Clinton is an expert at the old soft shoe. He can look at you and tell you one thing that's doggone, it's just the best thing that you could ever imagine, and that's, I'm doing this for you, I'm going to help the world. And he's got his international organization, the Bill Clinton Foundation, and doggone, he's out there working for you. What Bill doesn't really want to tell you is that he's had a little problem with nose candy over his life. When he was governor in Arkansas, the CIA cocaine operation, which was at the heart of the Iran-Contra issue during the Reagan administration, also being fueled by the Bushes, they were all in basically cahoots together, and Billy got a lot of money personally from this. Hillary, through the Rose Law Firm, was instrumental in cleaning the money, the laundering, as they moved it through those SNLs that finally went bankrupt. You know, all of this going on, the arms dealing with Nicaragua, the cocaine moving in from South America into Mena, Arkansas, etc. These are the backgrounds of these people. But on the surface, yeah, Billy's there and he's going to save the world. You can take that to the bank. But anyway, you have to understand where we are today and what's driving, what's fueling the society we live in. We are living in a society that is hell-bent on using as much physical resources in the world as possible to fuel what we call the economy. Now, a grand portion of this is being used by the military on a daily basis. But chaos, let me just transfer for a second with all of the trouble going on in Ferguson down by St. Louis. Yeah, there's a lot of problems. We have a lot of issues in this country still with racism, with this, I can't even go into it because there's so many opinions, there's so many views, it's not something that's going to be part of my show to try and break that down and analyze it. But the one overall thing you can say is that this country has some major problems. But the other thing you can say is that is what creates the power structure for the world bankers. That's what keeps them in power. This chaos, this antagonism between blacks and whites and Arabs and Jews and Christians and non-Christians and the turmoil that goes on in the world, much of it is orchestrated. Much of it, and the too many people out there are unfamiliar with the way the world works, the forces that are driving this world into absolute chaos, and the fact that we don't need GMO food to live and feed 10 billion people. The Oriental people with the biggest populations in the world, many of them have existed just fine on local agriculture. But now they're trying to come into the 21st century, industrialize, and pollution, unbridled pollution, is the end result. So let's fast forward, if we could, once again, up to those people who have not been born yet. The unbridled chaos, are we going to hand off a world to them that is laced with everything we're dealing with today? Are they going to be born with a number stamped on their forehead into a debt structure in which they're enslaved before they even have a chance to breathe their first breath? What are they going to be thankful for? What are they going to turn around and look at us generations earlier, 1, 5, 10, 50, 100 years earlier, looking at us, the people that are living today, and then look back? I had an interesting conversation with someone just a little earlier, and the conversation involved two major events in American history. One was the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence was basically a statement getting rid of the European bankers. The branch of the European bankers in England was the king. And the taxation, the personal degradation, the sucking of the lifeblood out of the country, and with the military rule where the British soldiers were bordering and quartering and robbing the public in the United States, and they finally just had to say enough. And they threw them out, and the Declaration of Independence was written basically declaring this country solvent of the European banking system, which was well in place, and it's the same one that's there today. The same one that robbed through the Middle Ages the wealth of the Americas, all the gold that came from the Mayas and the Incas and the Aztecs being used to fund that Rothschild banking system, all of it funneling basically into essentially the Catholic Church, which on top ruled all of these countries through controlled marriages, through condoning wars or starting and stopping wars at will. And the Rothschilds became the red shield, the guard, the banking guard of all of that wealth and that power, which then, for example, controlled the Russian Revolution. When the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks were battling it out in Russia in the early 1900s, guess what? The Rothschilds funded both sides. And when it came down to finishing off one of them, they decided for the Bolsheviks. The Reds won, the Blacks lost, and that was because the European bankers switched their support, drew support away from the Mensheviks. The Bolsheviks got more support, and it was an easy race to the finish line. But before it was over, the world bankers were already in place in Russia. The Cold War was nothing more than 50 years of conflict between the United States and Russia, conflict allowing the world bankers to control you. I remember as a little kid being told, okay, all of a sudden the voice came over the loudspeaker in the PA system in our little classroom. Everybody had to drop what they're doing, duck under the desk, and put your hands over your head, because that was a drill in case a nuclear bomb went off and blew smithereens out of the nearby city. That's what we were drilled into us when we were youth, so that those terrible Russians over there were going to destroy us, those commies, those Reds, and they were doing the same thing, waiting for the Americans to blow them to smithereens. And in the end result, the final analysis, the world bankers ran the world for 50 years through the Cold War with that control mechanism. Now they're using racism, every other means possible, and everybody here seems to be biting on that hook, line, and sinker. So let's go ahead, fast forward 50, 100 years into the future. Is this the world that's going to be handed off to those people who are yet unborn, that don't have a voice, that can't say thank you for something, that don't have a voice in creating their future? Is this the world they're going to be handed in that when they're brought into this world? Or are they going to be handed a world which is self-sustaining, which has organic, non-GMO food grown locally, and are they going to have energy left over to run even minimally their world? Or Are they going to have polluted water? Is it going to be filled with radiation that occurred 50 or 100 years ago that has a half-life of 10,000 years? Are we preparing them for major events like a passage of a Planet X type of object, of which we now know there are many, 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 many out in outer space? There are more Planet X objects, major planetary-sized objects floating freely out in outer space beyond the solar system than there are planets in the solar systems in all of the galaxy, that those can come racing into the solar system. And, of course, that is totally denied to the public. How can we prepare for the future when the public is not allowed to go into outer space? When the most we can expect is that in 20 years, NASA might think about sending someone back to the moon. What a joke. The whole plan is that nothing is ever going to happen. That's the plan. But there's always the promise of hope. That one guy to Mars in 30 years that NASA is going to do. What a joke. What a complete joke. And the problem, the biggest joke, is people bite off on this hook, line, and sinker. All the glossy magazines, Discover Magazine, Scientific America, Sky and Telescope, Astronomy Magazine, the National Geographic specials on TV, the History Channel, all have that subliminal message sending it to the public that these private space programs all seem to have a problem at the same time. Doggone it. We just got to go back to government big spending programs. It's the only safe way to get into space, isn't it? Well, not really, because if you look at Virgin Galactic and the amount of money they have spent, NASA couldn't provide a safe haven, a trip into outer space for a dozen people if you gave them 50 years to do it. And they wouldn't, because their whole motivation is to provide a smokescreen so that you can never go into outer space. You should be sitting here. I remember seeing the movie 2001 in the year, back in the, it was 1967, I think, when I saw the years 2001, Stanley Kubrick's Space Odyssey. I was a physics student, an undergraduate, just very excited about that. We went and saw that at like the IMAX or the surround, what was it called at the time? Forget it, but it was like an IMAX type of theater. And I went and saw that, and I was just so inspired. I knew that by the time I was 30 years old, we would have space stations. We would possibly have trips going to the moon. We would have orbiting hotels. It would be common to go into outer space. And we get up to 2001, and nothing. Drum roll, nothing. We get up to 2014. We have less now than we had in 2001. NASA couldn't get a mouse into space, let alone a person. You know, what has happened here is the public has bought off hook, line, and sinker this hopeful note that something, someday, and now they're talking about 30 years to send a guy to Mars. What exactly is that all about? And the people who do have space programs, the private people, the Richard Bransons, the Elon Musks, the orbital space sciences, the people that are on the ground trying to build a private space ground, program on the ground are befuddled at every step of the way. And you got to know that there are some people in positions of power who are going, no, you just, cut those people short. Whatever it takes, blow up their rocket, shoot them down, make it look like an accident, fake it, and that's it. So, the point is that 1967, I'm sitting there, young physics student, didn't have a clue at that point in my life. I had the concept that physics was something that when I got up, I grew up, I might work in industry. I had an appointment to the Naval Academy, something that I don't know is that public information, but Al Quie, who was Senator of Minnesota at the time, gave me, and this is a congressional appointment, I got an appointment to the Naval Academy. I wanted to fly jet planes. I thought that would be the coolest thing on the planet. I was tested. I had all the physical tests done. My academic testing was all done. I was on my way to the Naval Academy to fly high-performance jet planes with my physics degree. And then one guy sat down with me one day and he says, hey, I hear you're leaving as a freshman in college. Usually people get that appointment out of high school, but I had missed the round out of high school, and Al Cui told me, he said, this is a political appointment. It's the son of a guy who's a big supporter of mine, and so I'm sorry, but he says, come back next year and I'll put you in. And so what I was really gunning for was the Air Force Academy, but I got an appointment to the Naval Academy. He says, don't worry about it. Go there for a year, and you can switch over to the Air Force after that if you want. But as I found out, the Navy was really the place to be because they are the ones that had the private space program, not the Air Force. It was the Navy that was doing all of the logistics for outer space in the Tier 1 Black Ops space program. It was the Navy doing it, not the Air Force. So at any rate, that's just a little side story. But a guy took me aside, and he said, look, I hear you're going to leave us here at the college where I was going, private co-ed at the time, a private college, and as a physics mathematics major. And he said, I heard you're leaving us. What's going on? I said, well, yeah, I got an appointment to the Naval Academy. I want to fly jet planes, and I think that's really cool, and get into the physics program there. And he says, wait a minute, do you know what's going on? I said, well, no, not really. He says, well, they're going to have you over in Vietnam dropping napalm on people, innocent civilians and people. He says, and I go, is that what I'm going to be doing? And he goes, yeah, that's what you're going to be doing. And so I'm like, whoa, I didn't know that. Here I am, a sophomore in college, a freshman, and that's all of a sudden my first realization about the real world. So the day before I was supposed to leave, I called up the senator's office, talked to the secretary, and I said, say, I decided not to go. She said, what? What do you mean? Nobody declines an appointment to the Naval Academy or the Air Force Academy. These are congressional appointments. People would die for these. And I said, well, I'm not going. And So she basically said, okay, we have other people that will go, and that's the end of that story. Anyway, I'm about out of time here. I want to encourage you. By the way, just a short note, next Monday morning is the last day we will guarantee delivery of products by Christmas. So if you want something, you want it by Christmas, and this is going to be tough, but we're drawing that line for Christmas deliveries. No orders any later than Monday morning, like 8 o'clock. And so the webpage is there. There's still 10% sale on a lot of things there. I'm not going to waste more time on this show. Webpage, jmccsci.com. That's 7 letters, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. And I am very thankful for you out there, my audience. That's you are the greatest. And I'm out of time. Let's try and give the people in 50 or 100 years something to be thankful about, because they don't have a voice. Good night. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.